Okay. For those of you who don't know who I am, I represent an organisation in the UK called Collections Trust. We've been around with a different name for over 30 years, and we give basically help and advice, set standards, particularly for the UK, but also our standards are also used outside the UK. I'm not going to do a sort of much of a rundown of what the work package will be doing. Instead, what I thought I'd do is to cover two sort of broad areas. So the first one I thought I'd do would be a sort of background to linked data. And the reason why I'm doing this is that I think a lot of people have heard of the term linked data, but I suspect not a lot of you know much about the actual details of what it means. So you could think of linked data as being, you know, links, connections, so connections between things. And data, well, usually it's this structured thing that people put in computers, but let's call it stories. So here's a story with connections, and it nicely complements what Harry was talking about this morning about the First World War. So it's a First World War story with connections. However, these connections are going to be a bit unusual. I'm going to connect the UK's most popular poem, which is called If, so that's a work, with an event, the First World War, with an organisation, which is the Guards Division, with a fictional character, Harry Potter. Is he a person or is he not? The city of Cologne in Germany, which is a place, and the warship called the SMS Geisenau, which is a physical thing. We don't know exactly where it is, but I'll explain why when I go into a bit more detail. Okay, here's the first and last stanzas of this poem called If, and the author, does anybody recognise who that might be? No, it's late 19th century, early 20th century poet who lived in India for a long time called Rudyard Kipling. And this poem is basically setting out, you know, what it is to be a man. So the last line is, "And which is more, you'll be a man, my son." So who is he addressing this too? Well, obviously, it must be his own son. However, there is a tragedy waiting to happen with this. His son, John, today would be classed as officially blind. So he had very, very bad eyesight. And in the First World War, he wanted to join the army. And he spent a lot of time being rejected. But eventually, his father pulled strings and got him into the Irish Guards. Unfortunately, he was actually killed in the first battle that he was in on the 27th of September 1915. And here is his grave. However, there's an even more tragic story behind this, in that gravestone is virtually new, because at the time his body was not found, and Kipling and his wife spent 20 years trying to find out where he might be buried, what happened to him, to actually find that. And it was only recently that they re-looked at the records and found that a lieutenant in the Irish Guards was killed in a particular place, so it seemed to match, and this was the only body that it could be. So this is a new body. This story was dramatised in a BBC television drama documentary a few years ago. And here is the cast. Hopefully you might recognise who played John Kipling. That's the actor who plays Harry Potter in the Harry Potter films. There's also somebody from Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City who was... plays Kipling's American wife, and the daughter is also quite a well-known actress now. The symbol on the right is the symbol for the army organisation that the Guards were part of, called the Guards Division, and serving in the same division in the ammunition column was a group of people, and here's a photograph that we think might have been taken sometime after the war, probably in the Clone area. Now, the interesting thing is that there are four British soldiers, but in the middle, there's a German sailor. And if you blow up the cap badge of the sailor, which is the one on the right, you can see it says SMS Geisenau. So, you know, the question is, and there's no solution to this, certainly at the moment, so the German World War One project might provide this answer to this question as to why a group of British soldiers are standing next to a German soldier in a photograph. Now, the reason why we think it can't be before the war ended was it would be unlikely. But the interesting thing about the SMS Geisenau that was that it was actually sunk due to a battle in 1914 off the Falkland Islands in South America. So the speculation by the owner of this object is that this was a prisoner of war who came home after the war and for some reason met up with these British soldiers who were occupying the Rhineland area of Germany. However, so if you look at the guy on the left, here's another picture of him. Does he look familiar? Note the chin. That is my grandfather, my mother's father, not my father's father. So as you can see, I've used the web, so this is all off the web, including Europeana, and my knowledge to tell stories and make connections. But could I have had help to do that? Could I have done this in some sort of automatic way? There is somebody, a special guest that I'm hoping to give you a talk, who thinks we can. So, hopefully this will work, it did earlier. We're having a little talk from Sir Tim, the inventor of the web and linked data.
Last year here at TED, I asked you to give me your data, put the data on the web on the basis that if people put data onto the web, government data, scientific data, community data, whatever it is, it will be used by other people to do wonderful things in ways that they never have imagined. So today, I'm back just to show you a few things, to show you, in fact, there is an open data movement afoot now around the world. The cry of raw data now, which I made people make in the auditorium, was heard around the world. So let's roll the video. Classic story, the first one which a lot of people picked up, was when in March 10th, in fact soon after TED, Paul Clark in the UK government blogged that, oh, I've just got some raw data. Here it is. It's about bicycle accidents. 2 days it took the Times Online to make a map, a mashable map. We call these things mashups. A mashup user interface allows you to go in there and have a look and find out whether your bicycle route to work was affected. Here's more data, traffic survey data, again put out by the UK government. And because they put it up using the linked data standards, then a user could just make a map just by clicking. Does this data affect things? Well, actually, let's get back to 2008. Look at Zanesville, Ohio. Here's a map a lawyer made. Put it on at the water plant, see which houses are there, which houses have been connected to the water, and he got from other data sources information to show which houses are occupied by white people. Well, there was too much of a correlation, he felt, between which houses were occupied by white people and which houses had water, and the judge was not impressed either. The judge was not impressed to the tune of $10.9 million. That's the power of
so there's money in linked data.
Another piece of data, putting it together and showing the result. Let's look at some data from the UK now. This is UK government data, completely independent site. Where does my money go? Allows anybody to go there and burrow down. You can burrow down by particular type of spending, or you can go through all the different regions and compare them. So that's happening in the UK with UK government data. Yes, certainly you can do it over here. Here's a site which allows you to look at the recovery spending in California and take an arbitrary example, Long Beach, California. You can go and have a look at what recovery money they've been spending on different things such as energy. In fact, this is the graph of the number of data sets in the repositories at data.gov and data.gov.uk, and I'm delighted to see a great competition between the UK in blue and the US in red. How can you use this stuff? Well, for example, if you have lots of data about places, you can take it from a postcode, which is like a zip plus four, for a specific group of houses, you can make paper, print off a paper which has got very, very specific things about the bus stops, the things specifically near you. Larger scale.
So culture in your neighborhood.
Of the data which was released about the Afghan elections. It allows you to set your own criteria for what sort of things you want to look at. The red circles are polling stations selected by your criteria, and then you can select also other things on the map to see what other factors, like the threat level. So that was government data. I also talked about community generated. In fact, I edited. This is the wiki map. This is the open street map. Terrace Theatre I actually put on the map, because it wasn't on the map before TED last year. I was not the only person editing the open street map. Each flash on this visualization put together by ITO World shows an edit in 2009 made to the open street map. Let's now spin the world during the same year.
So linked data is about user engagement.
Somebody somewhere looking at the open street map and realizing it could be better. You can see Europe is ablaze with updates. Some places, perhaps not as much as they should be. Here, focusing in on Haiti, the map of Port-au-Prince at the end of 2009 was not all it could be. Not as good as the map of California. Fortunately, just after the earthquake, GOI, a commercial company, released satellite imagery with a license which allowed the open source community to use it. This is January, time lapse, people editing, that's the earthquake. After the earthquake, immediately, people all over the world, mappers who wanted to help and could, looked at that imagery, built the map, quickly building up. We're focusing now on Port-au-Prince. The blue is refugee camps these volunteers have spotted from the air. So now we have immediately a real-time map showing where there are refugee camps. It rapidly became the best map to use if you're doing relief work in Port-au-Prince. Witness the fact it's here on this Garmin device being used by rescue team in Haiti. There's the map showing on the left-hand side there that hospital. Actually, that's a hospital ship. This is a real-time map that shows blocked roads, damaged buildings, refugee camps. It shows things that are needed. So if you've been involved in that at all, I just wanted to say whether whatever you've been doing, whether you've just been shouting raw data now, you've been putting government or scientific data online, I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you very much, and we have only just started.
Okay, so you can see at least one person in the audience is very enthusiastic about linked data. The interesting thing is, what are we going to do about it? Okay, here are the linked data principles that Tim Berners-Lee published in 2007. And you can see there are various technical things like URIs. There's names for things. Use HTTP URIs. Useful RDF. Include RDF statements that link to other things. So I could explain what all this means, but I thought I'd, in this talk, just give you an analogy. So it's an analogy of addresses and people. So the first one is give things. So we're talking about objects, persons, organizations, places, and even concepts. So the concept of Art Nouveau could have an address. So give it an address. But it's more than just a where we are now. You've got to enable if the thing moves. So in the real world, it's the thing moves to a different server. You can have a forwarding address. So this is the idea of a persistent ID. Make those addresses accessible on the web so that people can actually see them, use them. When someone visits this address, give them something that they can use. So that's the idea of this. You can use this RDF to do things. And in the something, give the addresses for related things. So this is the idea of a cloud of interlocking related things. And this is the cloud as it was in September last year. There isn't a more up-to-date one. I think it's getting out of hand in terms of a visualisation. You can see that there are various types of things there. They're all coloured. The interesting thing is the almost total absence of anything that's specifically cultural. It's all to do with government data, geographic data, science data, and what else is there? There's some cross-domain. There is some user-generated stuff. Media. There is some media, some BBC stuff in there. But there isn't any, you know, specifically up-to-date cultural stuff. And that is what Europeana wants to do. They want a big blob somewhere there, hopefully, where it says Europeana. And there'll be lots of links. So that's the links pointing to DBpedia are people using DBpedia for their blobs. Okay, so what other use could we use the data for? Here's the cultural hack day that the Culture Grid did. We, Collections Trust, run the UK National Aggregator called Culture Grid. And we, you know, one of the things that they produced was this thing here. So say you're a designer and you're looking at all these wonderful objects on your piano and you think, oh, I'd like to use those colours. So how do you get the colours? This application automatically generates from the spectrum of colours in the image that you're looking at a RGB colour swatch. So this is, I don't think a museum would come up with this as an idea as to what somebody might use their content for. Just to say that this was done with the cooperation of museums in the Northeast, and they were very, very excited by what these people could do once they were actually engaging with them. I think I've just about got enough time to show at least a bit of this. This is the Hack Day Awards. Unfortunately, Harry is in this. And he's the, what you might say, is the equivalent of the compere, maybe. Is this going to work? Hopefully. The thing I wanted you to particularly take over is what the award winners are saying.
We had a very slick little film to show, but I can do it like this. Yeah, it's a very exciting time for us at Europeana. It's the first time we're experimenting actually with reuse of material. For the past couple of years, it was about collecting. And yeah, we organized this in a very short time frame, 3 weeks. And we were amazed at the results of what would be possible with when this material would be made available under more open licensing conditions. So the first people I need to really thank are the people who organized this. Europeana is very much a distributed network of organizations. We don't do this alone. So I'd like to give a hand to Adam Duchak, Concha Roda, Phil Purdy, and Rolf Chalman for helping organizing this. Thank you very much. Super. I see that in the background you see some images coming up. The most impressive thing to me was the amount of dedication that we got from people really coming here for, you know, nothing but their creative incentive to help us, and of course the prizes that we have in mind. Absolutely amazing. We had 80 developers overall coming to 4 different locations in Europe. We had over 50 applications built. You saw teams forming from different countries, from different organizations, lots of these SMEs that the commissioners was referring to. So we're extremely pleased. I think I'd like to move on to the prizes then. We had prizes in 4 categories. The first one is the category with the biggest social impact, we believed. And I'd like to get to the stage Michael Selway for Casual Curator.
He doesn't thank his husband, his wife, or anybody else. He just cuts to what he really wants
thanks.
To say.
It's great to be here, and this is brilliant. It's wonderful to be supported by you here today, and it's a real sign of the commitment that's there. We were presented with the possibility of 19 million records of 19 million objects in Europe's great museums. What could we do with that? We've been working with our partners, the Dublin Institute of Technology, and ourselves, System Simulation in London, on a great project called Decipher, about digging out the narratives inside museums. And we thought, stories, that's it. So you can use this application on your tablet or your smartphone. You can select objects from the museums of Europe, maybe the 1920s cars you've always been fascinated about, that like you can see here. You can organize them on your screen. You can see what you like and what you don't. You can tell the story about them, annotate them with just why it excites you. What is it that's special about that? And then you can share those. You can publish them, put them up on Facebook, email it to your teacher if that's what you're doing it for, or maybe send it to that great nephew of yours that's in America who you don't get to talk to enough but you want to share those experiences with. So that's what we've been doing. You asked us earlier to tell you what you wanted from us. There's just one thing. Do keep up the work that's going on to open up this data from museums so that it can be used for not just public sector projects like at the moment, but projects from the private sector too, and that would be really fabulous. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'll stop it there. If you want to look at the rest of them, you can see it. That's the URL. So what we're doing in Linked Heritage to carry on with this. Okay, here's the objectives. You can read those at your leisure. They're in the description of work, which is a bit like the Pirates Charter in the Pirates of the Caribbean, something for a bit of negotiation. But what we're actually going to do is a sort of a methodology that we sort of created, not purposefully, I don't think, in from Minerva times into Athena, and it's basically carrying out research, look at what exists, do some sort of survey, make an analysis, look for patterns, look for trends, give simple advice, and by simple we mean practical and implementable. And here's an example. You've seen them. You've got one of them in the pack. We're producing more. It's been mentioned. Reuse and create tools, and again, easy to use, audience relevant. There's no use producing a tool that is not of relevance to the audience. So we're talking about a cultural heritage audience here. And make them adaptable, so there's an open license, so they can be translated into the local language. And then identify further needs. So watch the website. Thank you very much.